Windows power users.
That sounds wrong.
Hey, everybody, it's Windows power users. Welcome to the Windows power users.
Wow, you're just going for it.
Now, we've been joking about doing a Windows power users episode for 10 years, and we finally did it this year. And you know why we never did it, Steven? Because I didn't want to install Windows.
Yeah. Well, here we are. So Relay FM members, thank you for your support. If you're not familiar with Mac Power Users, it comes out every Sunday. We talk about how to get more out of your Apple tech. It's a lot of fun. But not today. Today we're talking about Windows.
Yeah, we are. We are Windows Power Users.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, Windows Power. So we agreed to do this like a month ago, but because of recording issues, we've had to move it several times. As a result, I've had Windows on my laptop for much longer than I expected.
So you put Windows on a MacBook Pro?
Yeah, I just boot camped it. And I also installed Parallels. So let me just say that process. Boot camp on the modern MacBook Pro still runs great. Hold down the Option key, pick your operating system. If you need to run Windows, it's very easy. There's no reason. It'd be crazy to buy a separate laptop for Windows. And then also Parallels, still a thing, man. I installed it. I had a license. I don't have the most current license, but it works pretty great. But the thing I notice about Parallels is it's super invasive into the Mac operating system. It's like, you know, it's like you want to open an image. It's like, well, would you like to open this image in Windows? You know, it's like, I feel like they could turn that down a bit. People install Parallels to run one or two apps. Right. We're not looking to run the whole Windows operating system. But I largely used it in boot camp because I felt like I wanted to have as much of a native experience for this as possible. So you did the same thing, right? You just install it in boot camp. You wouldn't like go buy a laptop or anything.
I have a Surface laptop right here. 13-inch. I needed some Windows stuff for all the podcast-a-thon, live streaming stuff we've been doing. And we can get into that if we want to. But it was more than what I want to do in a virtual machine, and I just didn't really want to do boot camp. I was like, you know, I need to dive into this. I agree with you that having the full experience, I think, is better. One of my big problems with like Parallels, and I think VMware Fusion does this as well, it's like I don't want my Windows apps and my Mac apps like intermixing on the dock, right? And you can set them where it's basically like Windows is inside this window and it doesn't go outside this window. That's how I run virtual machines.
Well, I mean, like in my law job, there is an amazing application for litigation attorneys called CaseMap. And it's a relational database and it allows you to combine issues and witnesses and documents and questions. It's just a I'm not going to do it justice in this very short explanation, but it's only on Windows. I know plenty of Mac lawyers that run a Parallels installation to run CaseMap, you know, because they want that app. And they just run it as a native app, and you can do that. But my complaint was when you install Parallels, it goes overboard in thinking that you want to run every, you know, you want to like open a text file on Windows, you know. But I agree with you. The best experience for Windows is in Windows on a Windows machine or in a boot camp. And a boot camp Mac is, in essence, a Windows machine. The problem that you face, and it wasn't really a problem for me because I'm using this as a test machine, and I've installed these boot camp Windows machines. Occasionally, people will hire me to do a Windows-based screencast for them, so I'll install it and do it. But it, you know, it takes room, precious room on your SSD. And, you know, it's just you don't have a lot of space to play with already. And then you've got to manage this separate operating system on your drive. For someone like you that's doing this big live event, I can totally understand why you would just want to have a dedicated Windows machine.
Yeah, it's really panned out well. And, you know, I got to hand it to Microsoft. This notebook is really nice. So I have the regular Surface laptop. It's not one where the screen comes off. It's not one, you know, it's really a tablet disguised as a laptop. It is just the standard laptop. You open it, and it's like Microsoft's version of the MacBook Air, right? Very similar, actually, in terms of size. I have the 13-inch. They make a 15-inch as well. One thing I really like about this laptop is the screen is just the screen is incredible. Microsoft's done a good job of this on their Surface hardware. You know, if you go out in OEM land, Dell, Lenovo, whatever, the screen stuff's all over the place. But Microsoft on its products has done a really good job here. The colors look great. It's high density. It's a 3x2 ratio, so it's not, you know, like this skinny 16x9 thing, which I like for productivity. You have more vertical space, and it's touch enabled, which, you know, as a Mac user, is not something we have on our computers. We just have them on our iOS devices, and I think because I'm a Mac guy, I didn't really reach up and touch the Surface screen at any point when I'm using it heavily. I don't think about it. I just use the trackpad, which is also very good. But it is a touchscreen that is a big part of the Windows experience for a lot of people now.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's plenty of negatives with Windows. We'll get into it. But one of the positives is the experimentation with hardware from Microsoft and other vendors as well. But in particular, Microsoft. I mean, for so long, Apple was the only company that made decent hardware. I mean, I remember for years, PC Magazine would always rate the best Windows laptop would be a Mac laptop running Boot Camp. And I don't think that's true anymore. They're making some great Windows laptops. And not only are they good quality, or they appear to be good quality, I've never owned one in the last, you know, many years, but they're also experimenting. You know, if you look at the Surface line, they've got everything from an iPad replicant to something in the middle between an iPad and laptop. They've got the laptop like Steven has. They've got that Surface Studio, which I got to admit, I mean, if there's one computer in the world that I could wave a magic wand and turn into an Apple product, it'd be that Microsoft Surface Studio. I love the idea of a drafting table iMac that I can tilt down. And I don't know if Apple is experimental enough anymore to do that. But, you know, like when you think about the Apple Silicon coming and putting iPad apps, it would make so much sense. I don't know how I would, I wouldn't resist if Apple made one, I would buy it immediately. So let's just call them out. I mean, what a, you know, interesting thing that Microsoft not only came up with the idea, but they made it into a shipping product.
Yeah, I like that experimentation, and I mean, it's a whole topic for another time, but the back and forth between Microsoft and its OEMs, like you walk into a Best Buy, and you can pick between a bunch of different brands, and Microsoft is just in there, right? They're competing with people that also put Windows on their hardware. I find all that very interesting. Obviously, it's all very different to how the Mac ecosystem works, but
well, I remember all those years as a fanboy when Microsoft would say, you guys are going to, you know, Apple's going to fail. We Microsoft figured it out. We're letting everybody else kill themselves on hardware. So it's going to be cheap hardware and our great software, and Apple's an idiot. Now, I just think it's funny that Microsoft is 100% in the same game as Apple.
I mean, they came from such different places as young companies, and they are more like each other now than I think maybe some people would like to admit.
Or, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole new business model in technology that's risen up, you know, over the sale of user data. Neither Microsoft nor Apple are particularly equipped for or interested in that business. So all of a sudden, they're the two old guys sitting in the corner, you know, upset with the young upstarts.
So, of course, we're running Windows 10, which is the current version of Windows. Microsoft's doing this interesting thing where a couple of years ago they said, look, Windows 10 is just what we're doing now. They've had a pretty regular updates to it, usually two a year. And it's just a very different cadence than Mac OS where, look, okay, so Big Sur this year is a big change. But the last couple of years, you know, who can tell the difference between Sierra and High Sierra, really? Yeah. And so Apple...
Home one's high. I mean...
Yeah. It's... Yeah. You feel a little woozy.
You always want to go to In-N-Out when you use High Sierra.
Oh, boy.
Can we do that on the member show? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's fine. So that's just a different tact, even though some years Apple kind of follows that. Like, you could argue that Mac OS releases, like several of them could be lumped together and called one thing. It's just a different take, and it really shows the shift that Microsoft's gone through from being the Windows and Office company to they're doing now cloud services and gaming and all this other stuff. And Windows and Office are now just siblings with a bunch of other things, while in the past they were the main thing. And, you know, Windows 10 is, it's nice. It looks good. I like that you can go in and customize a lot of stuff. But, you know, it is kind of disappointing how quickly you end up in a UI that doesn't look or feel like Windows 10. And they've done a good job. It's way better than it was when Windows 10 first shipped. But with Windows, I always get the sense that the past is just always lurking right beneath the surface.
Did you ever watch Harry Potter? The Harry Potter movies?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know. I mean, yeah. So, all right. I feel like Windows is like the Weasley house, right? Mm. It started, and then they added a layer, and they added another layer, but you can still dig through the Weasley house like you can Windows. And in fact, one of the things that is amazing to me is the system preferences, or control center, I think they call it control center. The control panel. I started going in because I wanted to change the Bluetooth. I wanted to like try and use my AirPods with it. And yeah, I tried to really use Windows for this. And it's like you just start digging in the control panel. And before you know it, it's like I'm seeing panels that I used to see in my Windows machines 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's like, are you kidding me? They didn't redo the UI on this stuff? I don't understand this, Stephen. How do you do that?
They've done a lot of it. There's a lot less of that than there was even a couple of years ago, but it's all still there. And this, okay, I'm just going to say this. I think I just find generally tech holy wars to be boring, if not a little bit embarrassing, right? Like, yeah. I know a lot of Mac users want to, you know, throw rocks at Microsoft and throw, you know, iPhone users throw rocks at Android and vice versa. Like, I find basically all of that useless.
Yeah.
And then thinking about that, it's easy for a Mac user to look at Windows and judge it of like, oh, you know, you keep all this legacy stuff around. You're not willing to move forward, you know. But I think the reality is Windows is a very different operating system with honestly a pretty different clientele than the Mac, you know. To a lot of companies, a lot of big institutions that run on Windows, that legacy stuff is important. It's important that they can run their applications that they wrote, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Well, whereas on the Mac side, I honestly think it's a fair argument to say, you know what, maybe Apple moves too quickly the other way. And I think the truth, or like where they should be, is somewhere in the middle, because there's pros and cons to both. But I think, as we say, and like, oh, you know, Windows has all this old stuff, like, you know, really, like, how much has Mac OS X, Mac OS, like, how much has it really changed in 20 years? Like, there's lots of new features. There's lots of new things. They've rewritten probably all of it more than once. But the core tenets of Mac OS are still there. And that's the same with Windows. I think Microsoft's sin is that it's a little bit easier to see the past, where Apple does a pretty good job at putting a new coat of paint on everything when they go in and make those changes.
And I totally get that you could cherry pick problems in both operating systems. You know, if we were like really the Windows power users, we could use Macs for a week and come back with all sorts of crazy things. I just wrote a blog post today about Apple Mail flags, and it just doesn't track flags. You flag on the phone, it may or it may not show up on the Mac. It's like, we could have so much fun making fun of the Mac and all the dumb things that happen over there. I get it, but I'm still going to make fun of the dumb things on Windows today. Let's just be clear.
That's fair.
Yeah. But we use these things in production. And one of the things I discovered is it's a lot easier to work on Windows than it used to be, because so much of the stuff I do these days is web-based.
Absolutely. I mean, I kind of went through the apps that I use on a regular basis, and almost all of them are on Windows. Now, some of them are progressive web apps, or PWAs. And so this is a technology in Windows that, like Twitter, for instance, the Twitter app on Windows is really the website kind of in a wrapper. Like if on the Mac, you think about some of the tools that, you know, you can turn a website into an application. PWAs are more complicated than that. They can do local storage. They can do a bunch of other stuff, but they're not like fully blown native stuff. There's a lot of web stuff in there. And so, yeah, like the core of what I needed, I got up and running on Windows in a couple of days, you know. Yeah. It was sort of the power user stuff. is where it really started to break down for me.
Yeah, like all the, you know, Dropbox, Slack, Roam Research, all the web-based stuff I do, my billing program for my law practice, no problem. Something that Windows does better than a Mac is the Microsoft Office suite. No surprise. I mean, it's just better. And because I have an account, I could just install them on the Windows machine. And I was writing contracts on Windows for Word for Windows. No problem. I did a trial of Dragon Dictate on Windows, and it just made me sad because it's so good on Windows and they're not any longer on Mac. They were never this good on Mac. You know, it would be tempting for me, if there's one app that would make me want to keep this Windows install, it would be Dragon. So there are some things I liked, but man, there were also a bunch of things that it really fell down with. And the thing you were referring to a minute ago, to me, the super deal killer for Windows is automation software.
Yep. Oh, I got to ring the automation bell. There we go.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, they have Text Expander, you know, thank you, Smile, for putting, you know, bringing the glass of water to the people in hell. But, you know, they, you know, there's Hazel on the Mac, which is an amazing app. We've done whole shows on it. I did a field guide on it. Somebody made a copy of it called Belvedere, and it is complete dog, you know what? I mean, it is just, it's a joke compared to Hazel. And then, like, there's just nothing like Keyboard Maestro. I don't know if maybe that's a security thing or people on Windows don't care about automation enough for someone to make a product, but I searched high and low for anything like Keyboard Maestro, and there's nothing.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's where it falls down for me, too. And part of it may be that there are things out there and we're not as familiar with them. I don't think there's anything like Keyboard Maestro, but there are ways to do some of those things. But, you know, one thing that's great about the Mac, even over iOS, is these utilities that can run all the time and help us out in the background all the time. And yeah, that's just, the ecosystem isn't as rich on Windows, which if you had told somebody 25 years ago or even 15 years ago, hey, look, at one point, the Mac is going to have a better app ecosystem than Windows, you probably would have been laughed out of the room, because that wasn't true for a long time. And while there are, I'm sure, more applications available for Windows, the Mac has always had this history of really rich power user tools that are really customizable and not necessarily made for the broad user base, right? Like, most people with a Mac don't use Hazel, but for those of us who do and need it, it's the perfect tool.
Yeah, I would argue, I mean, I was using a Mac back in the days where they said there was no software for the Mac, and I always felt like there was good software. And one of the big differences between the platforms that continues to this day is the small independent developer community around the Mac. You know, we've talked about Hazel. It's a single person developer, you know. Keyboard Maestro is the same thing. One guy is making Keyboard Maestro. Smile, we talked about Smile. Well, they've come over, but largely they, you know, started out on the Mac. You think like Gus Mueller and Flying Meat. And there's like all these great little apps that solve a specific problem very well. And they're just, you know, like I looked for Transmit. I wanted to do some FTP. There's not really a Transmit. There is plenty of FTP software on Windows, but there's nothing with the panache of Transmit, you know, and it's just that kind of stuff has always been an advantage on the Mac. That's actually one of the reasons why I get scared when Apple starts treating the developers poorly, because that's one of the biggest advantages of their platform are these people. Apple needs to treat them well.
You're absolutely right about that. And it's give and take, right? And it changes over time. And the Mac, as we record this in fall of 2020, is around the edge of a major shift in its app ecosystem with the arrival of Apple Silicon Macs and native iOS apps. You know, we've had for a couple of years now iOS apps that can be rewritten and brought to the Mac, but then running out of the box is going to totally change the game again.
Okay, I have a couple questions for you. Windows has a frequent update policy. I mean, I was getting updates often on this machine. So like little patch updates. So that's, you know, that's one philosophy. It's like patch often, That way you're always the most up to date. Whereas Apple, you know, they're going to issue an update very infrequently to the Mac. Do you have any thoughts? I don't know that one is the right or the wrong answer. I think there's advantages and disadvantages to both. But what were your thoughts on that using a Windows machine?
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm not sure which way is better. Apple will very occasionally release just a standalone security update if something bad is happening. They had that a couple years ago. It was an issue with login window. I think they pushed it kind of outside of a macOS update. I think one of the downsides is that if they just happen, you know, several times a month, I think it's easy for Windows users just to kind of ignore them, or kind of like, oh, this just happens all the time, I'll just get to it later. None of these are super important on their own. Whereas when Apple releases, you know, macOS Catalina 10.15.6, it's like, okay, this is a point update that means something. I need to make sure that, you know, all my stuff's going to be okay. And it's almost a bigger production. It's a bigger deal. And I think that means that Mac users, I would guess that on the whole, Mac users are just more aware of system updates because they don't come around that often. I mean, Catalina is getting ready to turn a year old. We've had six of them, right? It's not an everyday occurrence.
Yeah, I think I prefer the Apple way because it's just more convenient to me as a user.
Yeah.
The other thing I worry about with frequent updates is every time you have an update, there's a chance some software you rely upon is going to break, you know. Apple Mail plugins are a great example of that. So if they had, like, you know, weekly updates, it probably would be frustrating. But I don't necessarily think it's wrong to do a lot of updates. I mean, I would think that's more secure if every time you find any kind of problem, you just immediately send out an update. But I don't know. I just thought about that. Now, the other one, and this is one I have an opinion on, but I want to hear what you think. I had forgot about how Windows puts the menu bar in the apps. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I've used the Mac so long that breaks my brain, you know, because the Mac, the menu bar is static at the top of the screen and its contents change based on the application. Whereas on Windows, they're part of the application window. I find it weird. I like knowing where my menus are at all times and don't have to go hunt them down. So I prefer the Mac method, but that may just be, you know, now almost 20 years of history built into my brain.
Well, see, I've had periods in my life where I use a Mac and periods where I had to use Windows. When I first started practicing law, I had to use Windows. And so I went from the Mac system to the Windows system back to the Mac system. And I 100% believe Apple got this right. Because my eyes, it's like eye memory or whatever. I know where to look for things. And I had forgot about it until the last month using this machine. I'm like, oh, yeah. This is stupid. I don't like it. I don't like it. I also, and this is just a personal preference thing, I like having the menu bar tools up in the menu bar as well, whereas Windows puts them down in the lower right corner. And I just find it's easier for my eye to drift up to the upper right corner when I want to see that stuff. But that may just be habit. But I definitely feel that the menu bar, you know, tools need to just stay in the center of the screen or at the top of the screen.
I want to talk a little bit about what it would take for us to switch to Windows. Not that we're planning on it, but just thinking about what it would take. Of course, there are apps that I miss. You know, living without iMessage on my computer is a real pain. But there's workarounds or other apps for a lot of this stuff. For me, it's kind of falls into two categories. One, I use iCloud for a lot of stuff. And you can sign to iCloud on Windows, but it's not fantastic. It's just, you're kind of syncing photos with folders and you're syncing bookmarks and you're doing some contact stuff in Outlook. And it's just not as deeply baked in as it is on the Mac. And so that would be one thing I'd have to address. But the other one is, I was a little surprised at how much of my audio workflow is based on Mac-only tools. So I edit in Logic. I put chapters in Artwork in Forecast. Those are both Mac-only applications. And, you know, I use Adobe Audition for some stuff, and that's what I would move to when I was, if I was going to use Windows, I would just edit in Adobe Audition and kind of get over it. But again, kind of like the power tools, Forecast and some of these other tools that are really specific, it's like, yeah, Audio Hijack is another huge example. I just prefer these like one-off apps that do something really well and they go really deep into something, as opposed to like recording an audition, matching my volume in audition, editing an audition, chapter markers in audition. I like having built a workflow where I can use different tools for the things that they're best at.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't even like to play these hypothetical games. I guess, say, let's pretend Apple like dropped out of existence and now I can't use a Mac anymore. I could get my work done with a Windows machine, but everything would be slower. And I would, you know, every day I would pour one out for Keyboard Maestro. Because there's, you know, there's so many things in my life that I am able, you know, to make happen with automation tools and just kind of the Mac in general. I mean, my big takeaway between the platforms is really hasn't changed. Over the last few years, if you listen to me on the show, I keep saying, well, Windows is better now and it's not like it used to be. But now I'm using it. I'm thinking, you know what? It still isn't that great. I always felt like the thing about a Mac is you sit at a Mac and the Mac's, you know, the whole point of the Mac operating system is to get you from your intention to your action as quickly as possible. You know, I want to make music. Great. Open up GarageBand, make music. Whereas like on Windows, I want to make music. Well, first download the MIDI drivers, then update your hard drive, then defrag, then find some third parties. You know, it's just like, it's crazy how many steps there are between action or intention and action on a Windows machine. And I still feel like that's there. You know, things like Keyboard Maestro allow me to even close that gap, you know, tighter on a Mac. So I could do all this stuff on a Windows computer, but there'd be a lot more gap between the thought of I want to do this and the actual time I do it. And that would drive me nuts now having, you know, been able to work on a Mac for so long and not have that problem. And I'd look for workarounds. I'd probably start using web automation. I'd even maybe consider Chrome OS if I could. I don't know what I'd do. Or maybe I would just go and be more, you know, embracing mobile devices with better automation tools. But, the tools are there for me to actually do the production. You know, there's Camtasia instead of ScreenFlow. There, you know, whatever it is, I can find a tool to make the thing I want to make. But just the process just gets, there's so much more, you know, lag in the system because the process stuff is just so much harder on Windows. You know, I call it the creation problem. I mean, you sit at a Mac, you can just start making things. I mean, when we had Dave on the show just a few weeks ago and he was talking about why he got into the Mac is he wants to make music for movies. You know, he doesn't want to sit down and figure out the latest driver situation, you know.
Right.
And that's just always kind of been my feeling too, toward the Apple hardware. And that's why whenever Apple strays from that, I get upset, you know, keyboards make me mad or whatever, because that's my mindset is when I sit at a Mac, I can make something. I can make something with the computer rather than work on the computer. And I feel like Windows just never got there. And maybe it is because of the markets. Like, you know, people in big corporations don't want their employees having tools like Keyboard Maestro.
Yeah, it's just a different type of user, I think, to a degree. I do think, though, that some of that's on Microsoft. Like, we talked about the legacy stuff. They've had a couple of different attempts at bringing sort of next-generation programming and platform stuff to Windows with varying success. And most developers are still using pretty old tools on Windows. And I can't help but think that some of our frustrations with it are rooted in the fact that they are just so tied to their legacy because of their big user base that it's hard to push the ball forward. You know, even if you were a developer and you wanted to, you know, set out to build Keyboard Maestro for Windows, I wonder how much Windows itself would hold you back.
Yeah, how much you could get away with in Windows. Yeah,
yeah, and it's not to say it's all bad, right? Like they've done a really nice job with things like bringing a bunch of Linux utilities and stuff into Windows. You know, that happened a few years ago, and all of a sudden, Windows was a much more tolerable place for different types of development that really happened on the Mac. Not that it was Mac development, but that it was development that helped or was helped by the tools built into OS X.
A few years ago, I spoke at Sal Segoyan's Automation Summit. He did like an automation conference, and he had a couple old timers there from Apple. And the guys that were in the room when they said, let's create AppleScript and let's add Apple events to the operating system, which is really the glue that makes all this automation possible. And it was done as like a shoestring budget, little department kind of crazy idea that Steve Jobs liked enough that they put in. But I remember talking to the guy. I wish I remember his name. I can't remember his name now. But the I'm like, do you realize that you were responsible for everything that's happened to Apple? I mean, if Apple had not had those automation tools, they never would have survived the 80s. You know, all these big print houses were using AppleScript automation.
Yep.
They didn't want to switch to Windows, even though everybody else in the world did, because they already had this automation that Windows didn't have. And that's what, you know, allowed the company to limp along enough to have its big, revival. You know, I mean, it's just like, it's crazy, but you know, I just feel like that problem never happened at Microsoft. I mean, I remember when Microsoft Office wanted to add Automator support on the Mac, they hired Ben Waldy to do it. Ben's like a Mac guy, you know, because they don't even have anybody in house that knows how to write those automation tools. You know, so anyway, that I think that is for me the big problem with it. I mean, it's a fine operating system. It's safe and it's secure. It's much prettier than it used to be, although I don't necessarily agree with the design aesthetic, but it has one, you know, and, you know, largely it does what it says on the tin. You run an operating system and it runs apps and you can get your work done on it. But man, I'm glad there's only one episode of the Windows Power Users.
Me too.
Okay. So can I delete this now?
Yep. You're good to kill it.
I'm going to delete this right now.